Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namani. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Bhacharani Nirvisesa Sanyavadi Paskachadi Satarani. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavam Chacha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Panchakalpa Chubhishcha Kibasan Dibhya Vita Paritana Pavanevi Alvajna Bhagavan Thank you all for coming to our next class on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Southern Section, Nectar Devotion, Chapters 20 to 34. I hope you are all relishing studying this. I hope you all had a wonderful Janmashtami and Vyasa Puja. You said you're getting a feeble sound. My sound is as normal. Should I talk louder? Is the sound still bad? Is the sound still bad? Thank you for letting me know. I hope you all had a wonderful Janmashtami and Vyasa Puja. And are ready to dive into Rupa Goswami's work and Srila Prabhupada's work. All right, so this nectar devotion, Bhakti Ras Amrita Sindhu. Yes, the devotional mellow of the nectar ocean. And here in the Southern Ocean, we're doing Vibhava, Anubhava, Sattvikabhava, Vyavicharibhava, and Staibhava. So now we're in the second wave. The second wave, so we finished Vibhava. Vibhava had the Alambana, which was on the Vishaya, Ashraya, and Udipana. And now, that was in the first wave. Now we are in the second wave, which is Anubhava, which we're here translating as voluntary expression. And this is a very simplified chart. Of course, the relationships are far more complex than this, as we discover as we go through. But this is our basic chart of understanding and our own translations here, keeping in mind that Srila Prabhupada stated that these words were very difficult to translate into English. So Srila Prabhupada tried himself to translate them into English, and we're trying also, but do keep in mind that these words are not entirely translatable. So Anubhava are voluntary expressions. When the Staibhava is stimulated by Vibhava and agitated by Vyavichari Bhava, these actions result. We're going to talk a little bit about what we mean by voluntary. Okay, so today we're looking just at chapter 27 in the Nectar Devotion. I want to again emphasize that we don't always do just one chapter, and please always refer to the syllabus. So our summary is these are the bodily symptoms manifested by a devotee in expressing ecstatic love for Krishna. They're called Anubhava. And they're divided into two parts, shita and kshepana. So, for example, yawning is shita quality and dancing is kshepana. We'll get into that more in a moment. So, how would we define Anubhava? So, how does Rupa Goswami define Anubhava? Those actions which express the bhava situated within the heart. Anu means to follow. They are predominantly external transformations and are thus called shining in the body. Now, next week, when we talk about Sattvika Bhava, we will explain more about how this works and what's the whole relationship. We had a number, again, we had some excellent questions, and I want to again thank those of you who submitted questions, and I would like to urge those of you who have not submitted questions to please do so. The questions I got this time about, and you know, in what sense are all of these voluntary, we'll actually be discussing that more next week when we look at the difference between Anubhava and Sattvika Bhava, because Rupa Goswami brings it up then. So I will just say very briefly that when the Sthayi Bhava, the basic connection, which Rupa Goswami also calls Rati, when that is affected by emotions coming primarily from Vyavichari Bhava, it can come from secondary Sthayi Bhavas, it's stimulated by the Vibhava. There's a change that happens internally that Rupa Goswami calls sattva. These internal changes result in involuntary bodily transformations like crying and trembling and hair standing on end. When sattva combines with intelligence, they result in what we're calling voluntary bodily transformations or anubhava. So the difference between a sattva, we'll discuss this more next week, when the difference between a sattvika bhava, like crying, and an anubhava, like yawning, is that the sattvika bhava does not involve the intelligence, and the anubhava does. So both the sattvika bhavas and the anubhavas happened when the basic connection, neutrality, servitude, someone needs to move, neutrality, servitude, friendship, parental, conjugal love is affected by some emotion and sattva takes place. Somebody needs to mute, and maybe I can find this person and mute them. Okay, hopefully I found the person. All right. So the continual perfect love of God, it is called Sthayi Bhava. Again, Sthayi Bhava is like neutrality, servant, friendship, parental, and conjugal. When it's performed in a particular type of transcendental relationship, it's called Anubhava. So this is from Srila Prabhupada's purport to 3.14.48. In other words, Anubhava is the way one exhibits one's Sthayi Bhava. A material examples are very helpful, because do keep in mind that Rupa Goswami is using the system of Bharat Muni to explain love of God, and the system of Bharat Muni can be applied to any type of enjoyment, material or spiritual. In fact, we could say that Rupa Goswami is using Bharat Muni's system in order to show that spiritual enjoyment is the source of all enjoyment, that whatever is found materially has its counterpart in the spiritual. Bharat Muni's is also used, of course, for theatrics. So let's say that I have a mood of service towards someone. Let's say there's someone who inspires me, that I really want to serve them, I really want to help them. So how will this be exhibited? What will I do? What will I do? You know, I might give them some of my time, I might give them some money, I might, might help them with something. So the anubhavs is how I perform my basic relationship. Now, it's very interesting. There's when we look at Bhagavatam 5.19.10, looking at the verse, we also find this word anubhava, Bhagavat anubhava uparvarnanam, the process of God realization, and the unfolding. So I have some pictures here of a flower unfolding. And I thought that this was a very significant way also to understand a definition of anubhava. So it is the process by which one realizes God, what one does in the realization of God. In many ways, we can call the angas of bhakti, the 64 angas of bhakti, and we'll look at this in the second half of our presentation today, aspects of anubhava. Mahalakshmi, you're asking how the emotions are voluntary. It's the actions. We're looking here at actions that are coming from emotions. Anubhava are actions that are coming from emotions. They're not the emotions, they're the actions. So we have the anubhavs and the sattvika bhavs are actions. The sthayi bhav is a feeling of relationship. The vyavichari bhavs are emotions. The secondary sthayi bhavs are also emotions. The anubhavs and the sattvika bhavs are actions, not emotions. They're actions that come from the emotions. Somebody again has to mute. Okay, let's see if we find this person again. Please mute yourself. Okay. All right, now there are two types of these anubhava actions. One is citta, meaning cool. That doesn't mean literally they're cool. Because I was asked, I have yawning here twice. I have to fix this slide. Make a note. Fix slide 15. Okay. So Shakti Srupani, don't distribute the PowerPoint till I fix this and gotten it back to you. So it's not that yawning and drooling and smiling are literally cool. It just means that they're not very... there's not a lot of big bodily movements. There are slight movements. And shapana means they're bigger movements. So we have kind of smaller movements and bigger movements. And Rupa Goswami is using the word citta and shapana. Now, Srila Prabhupada writes, when there's an extraordinary excess of ecstatic love with all these bodily symptoms manifested, one feels relieved transcendentally. So we got a wonderful question about why is it a relief? Well, again, think about a material example. If you're feeling some great emotion, you feel some relief when you express it. Right? When you're holding all that emotion and you want to express it. So this gives the devotee transcendental relief to express it. An extraordinary excess of ecstatic love. So the emotions of love are excessive. They're overboiling and they need some expression. So they come out in both anubhav and sattvika expressions. Now the question was also asked that how does Krishna like these? Because we all like when people show love for us. We all like when people demonstrate love. So why wouldn't Krishna like it? Rukmini's telling me, Rukmini, you gotta tell me what slide that is and I'll fix that also. Send me a personal note. Send me it on WhatsApp and I can fix that. All right, now we're going to look at examples. All right, the examples that Rupa Goswami gives. Well, first example actually we're going to look at is from the Bhagavatam 7.7.34. And please listen carefully because I'm going to ask you all a question about this. In fact, in this presentation, we're only having one group activity, but we're going to have a lot of whole group stuff, whole group discussion, and I'm going to be asking you a lot of questions as we go through. So this I'm structuring from a teaching perspective a little differently. All right, so let's read this carefully. One who is situated in devotional service is certainly the controller of his senses, and thus he's a liberated person. All right, so the controller of his senses is an anubhava. When such a liberated person, the pure devotee, hears of the transcendental qualities and activities of the Lord's incarnations for the performance of various pastimes, his hair stands on end and his body... His hair stand on end on his body, tears fall from his eyes, and in his spiritual realization his voice falters. Sometimes he very openly dances, sometimes he sings loudly, and sometimes he cries. Thus he expresses his transcendental jubilation. So what I have highlighted here in yellow is the anubhavs. All right, who can tell me what's a vibhava or udipana here? In this description, what are the vibhavas or udipanas? You can just write it in the chat or you can unmute yourself. Yes, Madhusudana Vishnu Prabhu, what is the vibhava?
he hears of the transcendental qualities and activities of the God's incarnations.
Excellent. Can someone tell me what are the sattvika bhavas mentioned here? I know we haven't studied that yet, that's next week, but if any of you can tell me what some of the sattvika bhavas are. Hair standing
on
yeah.
The hair stands on the end, yes. On his body, tears fall from his eyes, and his spiritual and voice fetters. These are the sattvic bhavas.
Excellent, excellent. So we have hair standing on end, tears, and voice faltering. Excellent, excellent. Okay. Now we're going to look at the examples from Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the Southern Ocean second wave. Yes, hair standing on end is involuntary, Mahalakshmi. Exactly. All right. Now, a number of you asked the question, "Does how voluntary are these?" Because some of these, like hiccuping or drooling, don't seem to be more like a sattvic above rather than an anubhav. But again, the distinguishing is that they are involving intelligence and thoughtfulness, whereas the sattvic abhavs don't. The hair standing on end is just emotion, body. Whereas these drooling, hiccuping is emotion, intelligence, body. So they're somewhat under the control of the devotee. Now, a number of you asked the questions as some of these seem rather odd. And that point is going to come up also with the Vyavichari bhavs and also with the secondary Stai bhavs. Please remember that anything we see in this world has some equivalent in the spiritual. And on the spiritual level, they're not actually odd. They're not distasteful. But if we look at them materially, they may seem that way. So yes, of course, in this world, when my body hiccups, it happens involuntarily, and I can't make it stop involuntarily. But here, with the spiritual symptoms, Rupa Goswami is saying that this, and Jiva, and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, that these are actually things that involve the devotee's intelligence. So that's the difference between it as a spiritual symptom and a material symptom. So dancing, we could all certainly relate to that, and that when we feel some emotion of serving Krishna, we like to dance. And the example Rupa Goswami gives that is that Lord Shiva and Ganesh were dancing to their drum when the Lord was playing his flute. So the Lord plays his flute. Wouldn't that be nice to see that? Krishna playing his flute and Shiva and Ganesh dancing, rolling on the ground. So two examples are giving how Akura rolled on the ground. And of course, Prabhupada comments in Krishna book that when we visit the holy dham, we should not care about our material position, but we should also, like Akura, be willing to roll on the ground in the dust of Vrindavan. Another example given was Srimati Radharani smelling Krishna's forest garland, and she started rolling on the ground, singing loudly. So the example is giving that Radharani's singing made her friends stone-like and the stones melt. So, of course, this is a very similar symptom to Krishna playing his flute. When Krishna plays his flute, also animate objects become stunned and inanimate objects begin to move. So someone asked the question, why would her friends become like stones? But that is a sattvika bhava, to become just stunned and motionless. So their singing was so extraordinary. Again, this is also a symptom of Krishna's flute playing, that her friends just became stunned, shouting. So Narada Muni, his chanting was like shouting, and the demons thought that Lord Nrisimha had appeared. Imagine, Narada Muni is chanting like this roaring of a lion, and someone asks, will our demoniac tendencies go away when we hear the loud singing and shouting of a devotee, of course. And Radharani, crying like a kuari bird. I have no idea what sound a kuari bird makes. but it must be pretty intense. It must be something like the Singadev roaring. Stretching the body, and I couldn't find any pictures of Narada Muni's Brahman thread broken, so this picture was taken right before this event. So it was taken right before this event. And Narada Muni playing his veena, his body stretched so violently a sacred thread broke. And who else have we read about whose body stretched in ecstasy? Anybody?
Chaitanya
Mahaprabhu, yes. And so that the fisherman thought he had gotten a corpse, crying loudly. I really like this picture that I found. So Lord Shiva cried so loudly in ecstasy that the demons were vanquished and the devotees were joyful by this loud crying. Yes. Yawning. Now we had several people ask a question about yawning. Like, why would Krishna like yawning? And we see here Radharani's friend is saying, why are you yawning when you see Krishna? You know, yawning usually means you're bored or you're tired, right? Oh, hi, person I love. Why would you yawn? But Rupa Goswami is comparing this to the blossoming of a Kamuda flower, which is a relative of the lotus in the moonlight. Opening. Oh, the person that I love. Oh, person that I love. Like that. And Krishna is so pleased to see his beloved's face blossoming like that. Then breathing heavily. And this is a funny example that Lalita's like a chitaki bird. This chitaki bird only takes water from the clouds. I don't know how they live in the dry season. And she was breathing heavily, which is an anubhav, and tears, which is a sattvikabhav. And this acted like wind and rain that pushed away Krishna, like a heavy wind might push away Krishna, and this upset her. So we find this kind of example given with both anubhavs and sattvikabhavs, that sometimes these expressions of ecstatic emotions actually interfere with one's service. And so the devotee, you know, oh, I shouldn't have expressed that, or I wish I didn't express that. But Krishna's always pleased by both these anubhavs and the sattvikabhavs. He finds them very endearing. Remember that Krishna, it's explained, Krishna's not really moved by the external service. He's moved by our love. And so when we show some love, even if it interferes with the external service, he finds that very charming. You think about how when the gopis put their jewelry and clothes on in a funny way, which of course would interfere with your dancing, right? You know, if you put your belt on your ankle, how are you going to dance? And they show up to dance like that. But Krishna was very pleased with this exhibition of love. Of course, they fixed it before they danced. Neglecting the presence of others and the examples given of the wives of the brahmanas, that they just didn't care. Just didn't care what their family thought. As soon as they heard Krishna was nearby, which is, of course, the vibhava, as soon as they heard that, they just ran to Krishna. Now, there's a quote here from the Pajavali, "Let the big mouse gossip, we will not consider it at all. By tasting the sweet liquor of Hari, we become joyful and intoxicated. Let us fall on the ground, dance, and enjoy." So it was lovely. Someone asked the question, I think it was Prabhupada Priya, that this particular mentality and this action doesn't seem very useful for preaching. Right? And you see, here's this devotee doesn't care what anybody thinks. And at least one guy is looking at him like, huh, what are you doing? So I went to look up the context of this in the Pajavali, and this verse was spoken by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Now, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was a very respected scholar in Jagannath Puri, and the fact that he had this attitude meant he was getting rid of his upadis. I am a very respected scholar, you know, I have to care what everybody thinks, and yes, And so the fact that, you know, like when he took prasadam in the morning without doing his bathing or anything, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came. So Lord Chaitanya was pleased that he was giving up his upadis. Now, generally, preachers do care what others think. We find Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, why he didn't want to go see Prataparudra, who was his great devotee. He felt others would criticize him. He said a black spot on a white cloth is very prominent. But he didn't always care what others thought about him. Right? There was this young boy who was the son of a widowed young Brahmani, beautiful young widowed Brahmani, and Damodar Pandit said, if you're going to make friendship with the boy, somebody will think you're wooing the mother. And Lord Chaitanya was like, you're too much. Why don't you go to Bengal and keep the devotees in line? So he didn't always care what other people thought. We're not going to, you know, we're going to go dance and chant on the street as if we're intoxicated, and we don't care what other people think. So drooling. All right, so we had a number of questions about drooling. And interestingly, it's described in the Bhaktivinoda Sindhu that normally drooling is a symptom of a scorpion bite. However, Narada and Prema became stunned as the sattvika bhava and started drooling. Now, how is this a sign of love? And I was really thinking about this, how when we salivate, it means that we're anticipating some taste, right? If someone's making a nice meal for us and we're salivating, that means we're really enjoying the taste. So this is a sign that one is really relishing rasa. It's a demonstration of eagerness. Laughing like a madman. And these sounds, this is not ordinary laughing. This is laughing like a crazy person. And this is compared to, each of the laughs is compared to flowers falling from the creeper of devotion. And Prabhupada references the Bhakti Lata, creeper that grows with devotion. And this laughing like a madman, it says, this is kind of like rude, loud laughing, flared nostrils, agitated glances while dancing. And this is such aggressive laughing that an opposing party can see it as ferocious. Mm-hmm. But one's own party becomes pleased. So it can be depicted as somewhat soft because it's pleasing to one's own party. So this loud laughing can be scorned for those who criticize bhakti. So we had the question that how can laughing be like this? And I was thinking of Lord Nrisingadev, how when Lord Nrisingadev was laughing, it was very disturbing to Hiranyakashipu and his friends. Right, but Lord Kapiladeva says that the yogi should meditate on the laughter of the Lord. So the demigods were very happy when Nrisingadeva was laughing and the demons were very upset. Similarly, when a devotee is laughing like a madman, the other devotees are enlivened and those who oppose bhakti are disturbed. Wheeling of the head. So it said that Krishna's flute makes a gale wind that causes the devotees' heads to wheel. Hiccuping or belching, so it can be translated either way. So Purnamasi tells Lalita that Radharani's belching or hiccuping is from her chanting of the holy name. Okay, so we're going to go into breakout groups, and we're going to have 10 minutes in breakout groups. This is the only breakout group we're going to do in today's class. And here I want you to look at two questions. That you're going to be discussing in your breakout groups. Okay? Two questions. So the first question is, how can we tell the difference? All right, and let me write this in the chat window so you all have this. So the first question is, how can we distinguish a material anubhava, remember we can use the same term, from a spiritual anubhava. In other words, if someone's yawning, how do I know that someone's yawning just because they're tired and they're affected by sleepiness or they're bored or they're in the mode of ignorance, or it's a symptom of ecstasy? All right. Second question I want you to look at is, how are all these anubhavas ecstatic and not negative? Because some of these anubhavas appear to be negative. So how are they all ecstatic? So how do we know the difference between a spiritual and a material anubhava, and how are all these ecstatic? So we can go into breakout rooms. We're going to have 10 minutes in breakout rooms.
In progress.
So I hope you were all able to come to some good insights in your group. Now we're going to turn to another part of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. We're going to go... Oh, wait. Can you see my screen or not? No. All right, we're going to be looking now at some other examples of anubhava from some other parts of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So we're going to look now at the Western Ocean. In the Western Ocean is where Rupa Goswami goes into more depth about the primary sthaibhavas. This is neutral, servant, friendship, parental, conjugal. And for each of them, he discusses what is the particular vibhav, what is the particular anubhav, what is the particular sattvikabhav, etc. So here he lists particular anubhavs. Oh, you want me to give you answers? Kamalini says, wait a minute. You only came up with contradictions. All right. Well, okay, before we go on, we'll do that. So, how do we tell the difference between a material anubhav and a spiritual anubhav? Well, externally, you can't necessarily. So if you see two people yawning, you don't know whether they're yawning for a material or a spiritual reason. One would have to look holistically. One would have to look holistically at the person's life, because anubhav is just a part of rasa. It's not all of rasa. So if you just look at the anubhav separately, no, you wouldn't be able to tell. And how are these all ecstatic? Again, if you look at the anubhav separately, you can't tell. The way we know they're ecstatic is they're coming from this inner churning, which again we'll discuss more next week, that creates what's called sattva, not sattvagun. Same word, different meaning. A sense of sattva in the heart. And therefore they're a manifestation of love. And the other answer is that everything comes from the spiritual. So everything in this world, the nice things and apparently the not nice things, they have some origin in the spiritual. So we're accustomed to looking at them from the not nice things without realizing the original form, everything is ecstatic. So that's my very simple answer, and I'm glad you churned it. All right, looking at this Western Ocean. So neutral love of God. Let's look at the anubhavas here. Could I have a volunteer to read this slide out loud? Someone just unmute yourself and read this.
Yes.
Okay.
Neutral love of God. Staring at the tip of the nose, behaving like a renunciate, walking while looking for meters in front on the ground, showing jnana mudra, joining the thumb and forefinger together, absence of hatred even towards the enemies of the Lord, lack of intense attachment to the devotees of the Lord, showing great regard for the final destruction of material bondage, siddhata, and for living without the influence of the gross and subtle bodies, indifference, non-possessiveness, lack of false ego, and silence.
Thank you. So these are anubhavs that are particular to those in neutral love of God. Now, by the way, when we get to our sthaibhav section here in the Southern Ocean, we're going to be discussing three different categories of neutral love of God, which I found fascinating. All right, now we're going to look at anubhavas that are particular to dasya bhav, the sthaibhav of servitude. Would someone else please unmute and read this slide?
Being completely involved in serving according to one's capacity, friendship with the Lord's servants, with absence of even a trace of envy on seeing the excellence of others' service, and being fixed in their love, which are all considered citta, or the special anubhavas of the dasas.
All right, so this is anubhavas that are particularly obvious in those with dasya bhav. All right, now we're going to look at anubhavas particular to friendship in general. Could we have a volunteer to unmute and read this, please?
Pleasing Krishna by hand-to-hand combat, playing ball and dice, riding on each other's shoulders, stick fighting, sleeping and sitting with Krishna on a bed, sit or swing, telling pleasing jokes, playing in the water and singing and dancing with Krishna, are the activities, anubhavas, common to all types of friends.
Thank you. All right, now Rupa Goswami is going to look at categories of friends. So these are older friends, Surit, if somebody would volunteer to read this.
Giving advice on what should be done or not done, engaging in beneficial acts, and being eager to perform all types of service.
Thank you. All right, now we're going to look at the younger friends. Volunteer for this.
Putting tambula in Krishna's mouth, applying his tilak, smearing sandalwood on his body, and painting designs on his face.
Thank you. Now we're going to go to anubhav of the equal age friends. A volunteer.
Equal age friends, Priya Sakhas, defeating Krishna in battle, pulling his cloth, stealing flowers and other things from his hand, being decorated by Krishna and hand-to-hand combat.
Thank you. A volunteer for the Priya Narmasakas.
Carrying messages among the young women of Vraja, encouraging the gopis' love for Krishna, taking Krishna's side when the gopis are present and Krishna is not present, showing skill at siding with the chief gopis when Krishna is present, but the gopis are not around, and arguing intensely by whispering in each other's ears.
So there is an anubhav of intense arguing. Oh, thank you. Someone for these additional for servants and friends.
Decorating Krishna with forest flowers and jewel ornaments, singing and dancing in front of Krishna, caring for the cows, massaging his body, fanning him, as well as other anubhavas, are activities that the friends share in common with the dasas.
Thank you. All right, going to parental. Volunteer?
Smelling Krishna's head, rubbing his body with one's hands, giving blessings to him, giving him orders, caring for him, protecting him, and giving beneficial instructions.
Thank you. And a volunteer for conjugal.
Such a thing as the glancing from the corner of the eye and a smile.
Now you might wonder, so Rupa Goswami is given here in the Western Ocean so many examples, especially for the friends. He really went into detail for the friends, but he didn't go into much detail for the beloveds, for the conjugal rasa. So for there we have to turn to Ujjwala Nilamani. In Ujjwala Nilamani, Rupa Goswami takes specifically the conjugal rasa and expands into all the categories that he's discussed in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. You could say Ujjwala Nilamani is part two of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, specifically for the conjugal rasa. So here he lists many, many different, and I'm not giving all of them, this is just some examples. So here we have Vishakha, she's grasping a kadamba branch, and she leaves the cottage. So this is an anubhav. Here's another anubhav, placing her right hand on Krishna's shoulder and her left hand on her hip, supporting herself with crooked feet, her head hanging slightly to the side, Asaki appearing fatigued. Here is another example, sincerity in the corner of her eyes, modest entreaty in her words, being very respectful. And here's another example. We're all familiar with this one from when Krishna leaves the Rasalila and the gopis are imitating Krishna's pastimes. And this is another one we talked about earlier, putting all the jewelry in the wrong place, where Krishna says, you've placed a sapphire necklace in your braided... saying to another gopi. You have placed a sapphire necklace in your braided hair, the lotus flower hair decoration on your full breast, mascara for your eyes on your arms and legs, and musk perfume for the body around your eyes. In great haste to meet Krishna, you have forgotten everything. Rupa Goswami also gives an example of Anubhava of speech. Dear Krishna, what woman in all the three worlds wouldn't deviate from religious behavior when bewildered by the sweet, drawn-out melody of your flute? Your beauty makes all three worlds auspicious. Indeed, even the cows, birds, trees, and deer manifest the ecstatic symptom of bodily hair standing on end when they see your beautiful form. So this statement of one of the gopis is also an Anubhava. So we're going to be looking at more specific Anubhavas. After our break, we're going to be looking from Krishna Das Kaviraj. We're going to be looking at the Northern Ocean. And then we're also going to go back to the Eastern Ocean for some Anubhavas. So right now we have our 10-minute break. So this is my slide for taking a break. Fly on your break, if you can do that. No, really, just get away from your computer and your phone. Go outside. Take some deep breaths. Take some prasadam. Take some water. Chant some japa, a real break for 10 minutes. Hare Krishna.
In progress.
Okay, well, I hope you all had a nice break. And I want to go on here to something that I thought was just really, really special. So, you know, we looked at Rupa Goswami's description of neutrality in terms of people such as the four Kumaras. But I thought we'd also look at, from Krishna Das Kaviraj Govinda Lilamrita, example of Anubhavs by plants and animals. So I thought this was really, really interesting. Okay, Kat, could we get a volunteer to read this, please?
Hare Krishna. Go! The bees by their indistinct sweet buzzing, the birds by their joyful chirping, the fruits by oozing sweet juice in jubilation, the gentle breeze by acting as a dancing master for the flowering creepers, and by flirting with the fully blooming lotuses, gave pleasure to all the senses of Krishna.
So these are Anubhavs. These are described by Krishna Das Kaviraj as Anubhavs of the insects, the birds, and the trees and the creepers. So we have one more description again from Krishna Das Kaviraj. If somebody would read this, please.
Hare Krishna. Seeing the Krishna's approach, the tree smiles by the blossoming with cluster of the flower. They sang with the chaunt of bees. They danced using all their fluttering wings. They offered drinks in the form of honey and food in the form of their fruits.
Thank you so much. So this is, thank you. This is the Anubhava of the trees. Interesting, huh? The trees are doing, this is their voluntary service. Now I want to go to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the Northern Ocean. Now here we're looking at Anubhavas for secondary Stai Bhavas. For the secondary Stai Bhavas. And these are Anubhavas that are specific to the secondary Stai Bhavas. By the way, after this, we're going to have a discussion on these specific all these specific Anubhavas. All right, so here we have Anubhavas specific for laughing ecstasy. So somebody read this, please.
The anubhavas are quivering of the nose, lips, and cheeks.
Well, this is an anubhav specific for laughing sthaibhav. All right. Now, adbhuta ras. So this is anubhavs specific for adbhuta ras. And somebody read this one.
Opening the eyes wide is the anubhav.
Oh, wonder when opens the eyes wide. All right, now we have viraras, which has, by the way, four divisions. Somebody read this one, please.
Shall we read?
Go.
Viraras. Attachment to Krishna mixes with the bellicose tendency, the charitable tendency, or the merciful tendency. If actions such as boosting are only for one's awareness, they are anubhavs. The wise say the other anubhavs are self-pride, roaring like a lion, proud words, bounding about, enthusiasm to fight even without assistance, not fleeing from the battle, I'm making the fearful fearless.
Thank you. All right, now we're going to look at the specific anubhavs for Karuna Rasa. Volunteer.
Attachment for Krishna mixed with lamentation. The anubhavs are drying of the mouth, mourning, slackening of the body, heavy breathing, shouting, falling on the ground, beating the ground with the fist and beating the chest.
Now here, of course, we found some that were common to all sthaibhavs, right? Like heavy breathing and shouting and falling on the ground. Okay, so Rudra Ras. Somebody could volunteer to read this.
Why was Kalinya with the previous explanation?
Excuse me, what?
Why was Kaliya in the photos and the paintings of the previous explanation of
Because Karuna the Rasa? Devotees felt lamentation when Krishna was in Kaliya. This Karuna Ras. Of course, the pastimes of Ramachandra are particularly filled with Karuna Ras. We'll get to that in, I think, our very last or second to last class. But when Krishna was in Kaliya's coils, the residents of Vrindavan were this secondary sthaibhav of Karuna Ras became very prominent within them. Okay, somebody who'd like to read this?
Wringing the hands, grinding the teeth, reddening of the eyes, biting the lips, deeply contracting the brows, flinging the arms, beating others, silence. Hanging the head down, heavy breathing, glancing with hostility, cursing, shaking the head, having the edges of the eyes turn pink, frowning and quivering of the lower lip.
All right, so this is when one is affected by the secondary sthaibhav of anger. Okay, some volunteer for this. The secondary sthaibhav of fear.
Devotion mixed with fear, drying of the face, heavy breathing, looking backwards, hiding oneself, becoming unsteady, looking for shelter, and shouting.
And by the way, these particular pictures are there because these are examples. I'm using pictures of the specific examples that Rupa Goswami gives in relationship to these secondary sthaibhavas. So he's giving a specific example of the gopis being filled with fear when Krishna was fighting with Keshi. Or the devotees filled with lamentation when Krishna was in the coils of Kaliya. All right, and the last secondary rasa, vibhatsa, attachment in mixed with horror. Somebody could read this.
I have read so many times.
The anubhavas of this rasa are spitting, distorting the face in disgust, covering the nose, and running.
By the way, this secondary rasa is in relationship to being disgusted with something other than Krishna. So all the other rasas are like being afraid for Krishna, lamenting for Krishna, being angry at Krishna. One can also be angry at Krishna's enemies. But this is particularly disgust at illusion. It's not the same as repression. It's not the same as aversion. It's an ecstasy where one feels disgust at illusion. All right, so I want to have, this is not going to be a breakout group. I wanted to do this as a whole group. So to take 10 minutes as a whole group to discuss, and what you can do is you can raise your hand, you know, the thing where you raise your hand. And we're going to be discussing why there are both general anubhavas and also anubhavas that are specific to the primary and secondary sthayibhava. So why do we have like this general category of anubhavas given in the Southern Ocean, and then in the Western Ocean we have the specific anubhavas for each of the primary sthayibhavas. In the Northern Ocean we have the specific anubhavas for the secondary sthayibhavas. And we also mentioned in Govinda Lilamrita for the plants even. And might there be anubhavas specific for individuals? So what are your thoughts on this? So I'd just like to know people's thoughts. If you have any thoughts on this, why there are general anubhavas and why there are specific anubhavas. So any thoughts, please raise your hands. Yes, Subhash Prabhu. You have to unmute. You have to unmute. Unmute, please. Subhash, unmute. There you go.
General anubhava, of course, I think it's common everywhere, what we understand. But it's very interesting about specific, because, for example, Bhishma Dev's, action of chivalry, and then Krishna has to react, so he picks up a chariot wheel. That is actually specific. It's their own particular rasa, their rasa in the form of chivalry. So that's a specific one, I think. Mm. So that's a specific kind of power. And that's a small point, and that's all I want to say at the moment.
Very nice. Yes, you wouldn't see that this picking up of chariot wheels would go on for all the devotees. You know, that being that attacking and like that. Thank you. Prabhupada Priya.
Hare Krishna. I was thinking that it's because this is the science of the learning this science and applying it and living it. So it's giving us these glimpses into the different relationships of Krishna and how their feelings to Krishna manifest, so that we can see, you know, the variety, one, of individuals in their feelings and services to Krishna, and also to know where we fit into that, you know, as developing bhaktas, and you know, what our relationship with Krishna is, what feelings and moods and anubhavs enliven us. So what can we more relate to? What could we see ourselves getting into? Mm. So, you know, at more advanced levels of devotional service.
Very nice. So, in other words, when people are starting to develop in Krishna consciousness, and then they're thinking, oh, you know, would I like to do that kind of service, or would I like to do that? What was resonating with me? Yeah, so we have the general anubhavs, and then there's that specific. Yes, thank you. Anybody else, any thoughts on this difference between the general anubhavs and the specific anubhavs? Yes, Rukmini.
Yes, so if we recognize that there are anubhavs that belong in some service that not only are we not familiar with, but we may never be familiar with because it's not part of our rasa, so then we can just recognize it and enjoy it as somebody else's anubhav, and so we can just be happy with the variety. Instead of, I mean, sometimes people think that something that is different from themselves is just weird or wrong. So we can understand that there's many different varieties. And so something that is not my anubhav is still, you know, pleasing to Krishna and ecstatic anubhav.
I think that's very profound. And could that be applicable even to sadhakas who may not know whether they're cowherd boys or trees? Anybody think about that? You know, just your Vaidhi Bhakti sadhaka who has no idea if they're a tree or a cowherd boy. So this thing that Rukmini just brought up, how could that be applicable? Mahalakshmi?
Yes. For instance, let's say that a group of visitors is arriving and unexpectedly. So the specific is that someone will run to take care of them and make sure they see everything, the deities and like that, and others will start cooking. So this would be some specific. One does not know in which relationship I am related to Krishna.
Very nice. And, you know, there's a purport, I believe it's in the fourth canto, where Prabhupada says that in Vaikuntha, everybody appreciates everyone else's service. And we see that sometimes that doesn't happen. Yes. Anapite Kripa Moi, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Dhanapana Mataji. Actually, variety is the mother of enjoyment. That's why Krishna wants to enjoy. So he wants so many varieties. That's why different type of anubhavas are there. So we also see that different devotees are having different feelings and different mood in the service of Krishna. Accordingly, they are having the relation with the Krishna. Suppose we discuss to someone is someone Prabhuji want to serve Krishna as his servant, someone want to serve Krishna as a friend, someone Mataji want to serve Krishna as a gopi. Accordingly, they are having their feeling. In that feeling state, try to serve Krishna, that their bhava develops accordingly.
Yes, thank you. And some of these are seemingly contradictory. You know, so we have these intimate friends who want to fight with Krishna, or in the chivalry rasa, they want to fight with Krishna, and the servants would never dream of doing such a thing. To them, that would be opposed to their mood. Thank you very much. Okay, so we're going to go on here. Oh, and I have two things in the chat. Yes, specific for siddha devotees. Yes. Okay. So now we're going to go back to the Eastern Ocean. And I believe everyone here has their Bhakti Shastri degree, which means you already studied the Eastern Ocean of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It was interesting. The other day I was having a discussion with a devotee and I mentioned something from the Southern Ocean. And he said, well, I studied Bhakti Shastri some years ago, but I don't remember everything. And I realized he was thinking that he would have studied the Southern Ocean in his Bhakti Shastri. But in Bhakti Shastri, we just study the Eastern Ocean, the first 19 chapters. Now, this section from the Eastern Ocean is also quoted and explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majjha 23:18-156. And here we see he's referring to anubhava. So if somebody could read this slide, please.
Oh, sorry.
Now you go.
My anubhava. When the seed of ecstatic emotion for Krishna is fructified, the following 19 symptoms manifest in one's behavior. Forgiveness, concern that time should not be wasted, detachment, absence of false prestige, hope,
eagerness, a taste for chanting the holy name of the Lord, attachment to the description of the transcendental qualities of the Lord, and affection for those places where the Lord resides, such as a temple or a holy place like Vrindavan. These are called anubhava, subordinate signs of ecstatic emotion. They are visible in a person in whose heart the seed of love of God has begun to fructify. Dr. Samrita Sindhu, 1.3.25, quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 23.18.19.
Thank you very much. So these are general anubhavas that are found in devotees who have attained the stage of bhava when we're talking about shraddha to prema. And of course, these exist to some extent even in sadhakas. So we're going to look at each one of these one by one, and I'm going to be asking the same question for each one of these. I'm going to be asking the same question for each one of these. And the question I'm going to ask for each one of these is, how is this a voluntary action that stems from love of God? So that is, I just put it in the chat window. So that's the question I'm going to be asking for each one of these. So all these, I have at least one slide, some I have two or three. So the first anubhava here, these are also general anubhavas, are kshanti, or forgiveness. So here we have pictures of Maharaj Ambarish, who's tolerant to Durvasa, and Lord Vishnu tolerating Bhrigu Muni. So the definition here is to remain tolerant and patient even amid great disturbance. So I'd like to ask all of you, any of you can raise your hand, how is this, how is forgiveness and tolerance, how is this a voluntary action that comes from love of God? So if I have some love of God, just even a beginning of love of God, how is it that I will manifest forgiveness? Anybody, how does forgiveness come from love of God?
Yes.
Yes, Mahalakshmi.
Because we understand the situation of others because we are following the process, and we are conscious of our own limitations and our previous mistakes, and then we'll feel compassion and ready to forgive whatever mistake others may perform.
Okay, thank you. I want to see a really clear link between loving Krishna and this action. So I love Krishna, therefore I will forgive. Thank you, Mahalakshmi. That was very insightful. Anybody else? Any other thoughts? Vinata, yes, nice to see you.
Thank you. Everybody love Krishna. We are conscious that everybody is part of Krishna and that everybody is dear to Krishna, and that nothing happens without his sanction. So we have no reason to be disturbed by others, because whatever is coming from them is sanctioned by Krishna, and also we see them in relationship to him. So they are dear to him, then therefore they are dear to us also.
I really like you made two points. First of all, that I'm forgiving of others because when I love Krishna, everyone who loves Krishna loves everyone that Krishna loves. Everyone who loves Krishna loves everyone that Krishna loves. Everyone who loves Krishna loves everyone who Krishna loves. And your other point was that we see that actually Krishna is acting through that person. That person couldn't be doing anything bad to me unless Krishna was sanctioning. Yes, Anarpita Kripa Moyi Prabhu.
Compassion is the cause of the forgiveness. Without compassion, one cannot forgive anyone. So Lord is full of compassion. That's why he always forgives the offenses of anybody.
So when I love Krishna, I connect with Krishna's compassion and I become compassionate. Thank you. Okay, we're going to go on to the next one. Avyarta kalatvam, being free from wasting time. being free from wasting time. Yes, someone wrote in the chat, Lalita Prithimayi wrote, because Krishna loves the other person, yes. So with their words, they offer prayers to the Lord. With their minds, they always remember the Lord. With their bodies, they offer obeisances to the Lord. Despite all these activities, they are still not satisfied. So they're thinking, I want to serve Krishna more and more and more. All right, some thought in how this is a voluntary action that stems from love of God. So how is using all of one's time in service, how does that, is that a voluntary action stems from love of God? Be nice to hear from someone who hasn't said anything yet. Some of you haven't said anything yet. Be nice to hear your thoughts. Anybody? How is this a voluntary action stemming from love of God?
Hare Krishna, Mataji.
Hare Krishna, thank you.
When we love someone, we want to spend time with that person. And if we are not spending time with that person and we are wasting time in some other things, that shows we don't love him. So when we are spending time with him, praying to him, or, you know, offering obeisances on all that, that means we love him.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, I'm going to go on to the next one. We have some nice examples. Srila Prabhupada was utilizing his time very wonderfully. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, yes, an example given is Maharaj Purkit also. Okay, now this next one has to be understood very carefully. This next one has to be understood very carefully. Viraktihi, detachment. Now, this detachment is different from a sadhana. This detachment is different from a sadhana. So, there's one gentleman I know who's a devotee of Krishna, chants 16 rounds, etc. And he's also a Franciscan monk. And he's a very well-known teacher and preacher in the Catholic community. And he said to me, he said, I've taken up celibacy as a charism, not as a discipline. So I looked up charism, it means a gift. So detachment in those who've attained bhava, viraktihi, is not a discipline. It's not that they're restraining themselves from the objects of sense gratification. Rather, they just don't feel any interest. Prabhupada says those at bhava feel like this because they see the naked form of maya. They see maya for what it is. So I'm asking again the same question, that how is this a voluntary action that stems from love of God? So how is this kind of detachment a voluntary action that comes from loving Krishna? Thoughts?
Having higher tastes or lower tastes is automatically given up.
Yes.
That's over, yes.
Yes. Yes. Can you connect that higher taste to love for Krishna? So how does, what's the relationship of that higher taste to love for Krishna?
Hare Krishna.
Yes.
So I've heard Prabhupada writes at some places that we practice detachment by attachment. So that's how our process is different. So we attach ourselves to Krishna, and because we are so attached to him, that's why we are detached from other things. Like nobody can get detached from everything, but our process is detachment by attachment. So because of our attachment to Krishna, we get detached.
Yes, very nice. There's one lecture where Srila Prabhupada is talking about of the 26 qualities of a devotee being without possessions, without a feeling of possessiveness. That doesn't mean you don't have a pair of shoes. It means you don't have a sense of possessiveness. And Prabhupada explained there that the only way to feel that one has no possessions is to possess Krishna. To feel that it is mamata, that Krishna is mine. Mm. Any other thoughts on this detachment? I think it's very, very, very important to really distinguish this detachment. Yes, Vinata.
I would say that maybe when we love Krishna, we don't want anything to be separated from him. So we see him connected with everything. And when we see him connected with everything, then we see everything connected with him, and there is no sense of identification there.
Mm. That's very beautifully put. Any other thoughts on this? This is so important because it's so easy to do this detachment artificially, not as an out from our from love. Yes, Shama Jyoti Krishna. Is that
detachment?
Yeah,
detachment from Jnana and Vairagya.
Ooh! Wow!
That's the definition of pure devotional service. You have to be. Detached from Jnana and Vairagya.
Even detached from Vairagya. Therefore, this detachment is not the same. Beautiful, beautiful. And we know that our acharyas say that Sudama Brahmana was given this big palace because he was attached to his Vairagya. Yes, that was very deep. Prabhupada Priya.
I was thinking that when you love someone, you want to offer everything with them, you want to share everything with them. So you're not thinking of yourself. You know, like real love is selfless. You want to please the other person. So if we actually love Krishna, then we want to please him. We want to use everything that's within our disposal for his pleasure, but not our own.
Yes, that would also relate to the utilization of time. It would be very related to both of those. All right, thank you very much. We're going to go on. Oh, we have some things in the chat. If it is not by force, then how is it voluntarily? Madhusudana Vishnuprabhu, could you explain your question?
Yes, Mataji. Like we say, this is anubhav, so it is a voluntary expression. So here the definition, it's not by force, which apparently means it's happening involuntarily.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. So it can't be something forced. It's not something. This detachment is not something that's being forced on oneself or being forced on others. Rupa Goswami gives the example of Maharaj Bharat for this detachment. Okay, we're going to go on to the next one. An absence of false prestige. So the reason I put these pictures here is I was thinking about Madhavendra. Poor. Yes, it's still conscious, involving intelligence. Thank you, Prabhupada Priya, for reminding us that all the anubhavas involve conscious intelligence. This absence of false prestige, I thought to illustrate it by Madhavendra Puri, who, when traveling to get sandalwood for Gopal, a Gopinath stole the sweet rice for him. And when Madhavendra Puri, after eating the sweet rice, he was thinking, oh, now I'm going to get people honoring me, that Gopinath has stole the sweet rice from me. And so he left Raymuna. Of course, the prestige followed him, but he didn't want anyone to honor him. The example given by Rupa Goswami is of King Bhadirata, who was the emperor among all other kings, yet he developed such ecstatic love for Krishna that he became a mendicant and went out begging even to the homes of his political enemies and untouchables. He was so humble that he respectfully bowed down before them. So his prestige rolled after him like a tumbleweed indeed. So I'd like to now ask, how is this pridelessness, how is this eschewing honor, how is this a voluntary action that comes from loving Krishna? Anybody's thoughts on this? Again, it'd be nice to hear from someone who has not yet contributed.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, thank you.
When we deeply understand our insignificance, we cannot really control anything at all. Everything is controlled directly and indirectly by the Lord. Then, naturally, this pridelessness will follow.
Beautiful. Very beautiful. Anybody else have some thoughts on this? How this is a voluntary action that comes from love of God?
I was also thinking, when someone is situated in their real identification that they're servant of Krishna, they have nothing to lose. So there's nothing to cover and put a show on. So
that's a very philosophically deep understanding, because my false identity is something that I could lose. It's a shaky thing. It's not something solid. And so when I'm not established in love for Krishna, then I'm going to have false pride. Anarpita Kripa Mori Prabhu?
Hare Krishna Mataji, this quality liking to Lord, when Raghunath Das Goswami went to Jagannath Puri, he has presented Satya Shimtam. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased by seeing his Satya Shimtam. He was eating the rejected food and he has seen this special quality of the Sriks Goswamis also. When they went to the Vrindavan, they were living under the tree, they were just doing madhukari. So he was very pleased by their action. So this quality is pleasing to Lord. If someone wants to please Lord, one can obtain such a quality.
So I think what you're saying is that the devotees naturally adopt a mood of humility and pridelessness, because that makes Krishna very happy, yes? And so because they love Krishna, they want him to be happy in that way.
Yeah.
Rukmini?
Yes, so when a person is actually in love with Krishna, then they think that whatever they can do is not enough. They can't possibly express their love enough. They can't do enough. They can't say enough. They can't even love enough. So then, when the most important aspect of their being is, they wish they could do more, then what is there to be proud of? One is prideless.
Oh, thank you. Prabhupada Priya?
Yeah, that if I love someone, I want that person to be in the center. I want that person to be glorified. It's like we were talking with Srila Prabhupada that, these other gurus that came from India, they're famous in their own name, but around the world, many people don't know Prabhupada, but everyone knows Krishna, because Prabhupada made Krishna famous, because he emphasized Krishna out of his love for Krishna.
Interesting.
And put himself in the background.
We don't call this the A.C. Bhakti Vinata Swami Prabhupada movement. It's called the Hare Krishna movement. Prabhupada always wanted Krishna at the center. Mahalakshmi?
Because a devotee sees everyone as part and parcel of Krishna, and as servants of Krishna in whatever variety there may be, and thus one is not better or less than anyone else. It's just one a servant, and thus they are free of pride.
Beautiful, beautiful. It's a natural thing. I love Krishna. I see everybody is equal. Yes, Vinata.
Well, this is the stage of bhava bhakti.
Yes.
Which is spontaneous. And the heart is melted. The heart is melted. Marshanya, Hirdaya Marshanya, and Mamatava to Krishna. Because of the attachment to Krishna and softening of the heart, all these things manifest automatically, because that stage of the Bhava Bhakti is automatic. This is spontaneous. This is voluntary.
Yes.
There's no force on that.
Yes.
So that is the basic foundation for all these symptoms.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see. I'm looking. My emphasis is not so much on the word voluntary. My emphasis is mostly on how is it linked to love of God. How is it that when I love God, these are the things I'm going to do? So I'm very grateful that you're bringing up this contrast with force. Thank you. That's very important. I'd like to look deeply at why, when I love God, do I do this? Madhusudana Vishnu Prabhu, did you have something you wanted to say?
I was just thinking that the devotee thinks if he is going to be proud, how is he going to approach people and give them Krishna? So he takes a lower position, becomes prideless, and that makes it possible for him to approach anyone and everyone and share Krishna. So for preaching.
Oh, very nice. I know a couple people have things to say, but we have to move on. Please excuse me. So Oh, we have a bunch of things in the chat. Okay. Oh, the lady with the cow, that's Parvati. And that's not a cow, it's Nandi. So the photo is, that's Nandi, Krishna's bull, Lord Shiva's bull. You can see, if you look closely, you can see that that is a bull, not a cow. And that is Parvati. So we have Bhagiratha, and Ganga is coming from, that's Ganga coming down to the head of Lord Shiva by the prayers of Bhagirath. And that is Parvati and Nandi observing. Yes, I actually have several versions of this lila. Okay, Asabandha. This is an intense anubhav. And I didn't want to take the time for this presentation, but there's wonderful, wonderful prayers that Rupa Goswami is quoting of this Asabandha. That this is a kind of a combination between feeling very humble, very unqualified, and at the same time being really certain, I know for sure that Krishna is going to deliver me, that Krishna is going to be merciful to me, and I am so fallen. I'm not thinking Krishna is going to deliver me because I'm qualified. I'm thinking Krishna is going to deliver me so because I'm fallen. So how does this behavior, how does it arise from love of God? How does love of God give rise to this behavior? Any thoughts? Manasuna Vishu, is your hand raised for this one?
I'm sorry.
Or is this left over from the last one? Prabhupada Priya?
That I love Krishna, and I know that Krishna reciprocates with those who love him. So that means that he also loves me, and he doesn't want to keep me here suffering in the material world. So, of course, he's going to deliver me.
Okay, any other thoughts?
Hare Krishna Madhai.
Yes.
A child is having always one attitude. He, whenever he cries, he just raises his hand in front of mother. And mother never ever leaves herself without just taking up. So this is the natural reciprocation. Whenever we are dependent upon the Lord, it is the natural. Lord always comes to help us. We never ever seen in the any history, in the any scriptures, Lord did not help to his devotee. Always he has helped to the devotees, those has raised their hands with the full of hope. So that's why devotees are always depend on the Lord.
I like that image of the child. I like that the child raising their hands. Purna Praja Keshava Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Unless one feels disqualified, he cannot receive the mercy of the Lord. One feels that I am qualified, how will he feel the love of God, get the mercy of Krishna? Both are opposite qualities.
How can I ask for mercy if I think that I don't need it? Yes.
Yeah. If I feel that I deserve the mercy, then that itself shows that I don't deserve it.
Yes. Well, mercy by definition is something I don't deserve, isn't it? Isn't that what mercy means? Mercy means something given that I don't deserve. So as soon as I think I deserve it, yes, so this we have this humility. Mahalakshmi?
It's more or less been expressed, yet although I don't deserve the mercy of the Lord, still I am His. What to do? So I love Him. And I am convinced He's going to take care of me because I am His. And the devotee says to that, raises the hands and says, my Lord, from this day on I am yours, although unqualified. So that feeling of unqualification calls the Lord to pay attention, because there is nothing else besides Him that can save me. So He will take care.
Well, I don't know if anyone expressed that quite as beautifully as you did. So that was a wonderful contribution. Okay, so we're going to move on to eagerness, an ardent desire to associate the Lord. And out here I want to look at whether or not, how this is different from material desire also. So I want to look at how this eagerness comes from love of Krishna. I think that's pretty obvious, that if I love someone, I want to be with them. So I think that's a pretty obvious question. Whenever we love someone, we want to be with them. But how is this different from a material desire? So this is a slightly different question. How is this eagerness not just like Rajagun? What makes it spiritual eagerness? So any thoughts on this? And again, if someone hasn't said anything, I'd really like to hear from you. There's some of you who haven't said anything yet. How is this anubhav of eagerness? How is this different from just, you know, tamagun and rajagun? Purna Praja Keshava Prabhu?
Hare Krishna. So this eagerness is associated with the Lord for Krishna's pleasure. Mm-hmm. But in Raja and Tamagun, it is for one's own protection.
Wow. I think you just hit it. So why is it for Krishna's pleasure? Let's go to the next level. Why is this eagerness to be with Krishna? Why does that please Krishna? Anybody else? Some thoughts? Madhusudana Vishnu Prabhu.
That they respond to Krishna's call to serve Krishna. So that eagerness is based on that, not my selfish interest.
All right, so there's an example given here. Thank you. There's an example given here. We have something in the chat. Not selfish motive to enjoy Krishna, but to give pleasure to Krishna. Yes. Yes. Yeah. The material world people can confuse their attachment with a person with love for that person. Their attachment is rajagun. Yes, so in the material world, one can be attached to somebody for what they do for me. I'm very attached to somebody for what they do for me. I was giving a class once at 26 Second Avenue, and one of the guests, fairly new to Krishna consciousness, said, you know, a friend of mine died recently. Was my grief at her death because that her death changed my identity? And I was like, wow. You know, when my friend dies, I can't say, well, I'm her friend anymore. She's not there. So we often are attached to people in this world because they do something for us. They add to our prestige. They add to our sense gratification. But the eagerness to be with Krishna is because Krishna wants our company. So Rupa Goswami gives this example, quoting from the Krishna Karnamrita. O Krishna, O flute player, the sweetness of your early age is wonderful within these three worlds. You know my unsteadiness and I know yours. No one else knows about this. I want to see your beautiful, attractive face somewhere in a solitary place. But how can this be accomplished? So this is this example of eagerness. All right. A constant taste for the holy name. A constant taste. So how is this an action that comes from love of God? Any thoughts on this? How is a constant taste for the holy name an action that comes from loving Krishna? Shamajyoti Krishna Prabhu.
Yeah, Krishna, today is a very special day in London because we are celebrating this 125 years of Srila Prabhupada. So Govinda Prabhu is actually starting today, going on every tube station and distributing the holy name. He's got this ruchi and he's doing Sankirtan, you know, every Thursday and other days as well. But today is a special day for him. He's starting all the underground stations. So he's got this holy name, taste for holy name.
That's a
practical example in that.
Practical example. So how this taste comes from love, Avinash Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Well, the holy name is the Lord is not different from the Lord himself.
for anybody who has love for Krishna, but I have love for his name.
Very beautiful. I'm thinking also, you know, there's so many ordinary love songs where people are constantly saying the name. Right? When I was growing up, there was one song, Gloria, 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 and whatever. There's going to be some song where someone is saying the name. Okay, we need to move on. Sorry for those of you who I didn't get to. Yes, the devotee feels the holy name non-different. Okay. So here, attachment to describing Lord Krishna's qualities. All right, I want to ask for this example given by Rupa Goswami. The transcendental body of Krishna is very sweet, and his face is even sweeter than his body, but his soft smile, which has the fragrance of honey, is sweeter still. What's the Udipana here for this Anubhav? What is the Udipana? Specific. We have a very specific Udipana here. For those of you who remember the Udipana from last week. Smile! Krishna's smile. Krishna's smile. Okay, and I think this is pretty obvious. If I love Krishna, I want to talk about him. Right? People are talking about so many people in this world that they love. The quality, the soft smile, yes. Particularly the soft smile. So, because people have an attachment to someone, they naturally want to talk about them. So, that's fairly obvious. Okay, and here we have affection for temples and holy places. And the example that Rupa Goswami gives is, when shall I dance in ecstasy on the bank of the Yamuna? So, how does this come from love of God? How does affection for temples and holy places come from love of God?
Hare Krishna.
Yes. Oh, very nice. Thank you.
Yes, Mataji. When I know that it's his house, the Vrindavan, so, you know, the person that I love, I wish to go to his house again and again.
Beautiful, beautiful. Any other thoughts on why attachment to holy places and temples comes from love of God? Yes.
It's a good idea. I mean, practical is called Vrajaman Paritam. You go to the holy places, you see all the pastimes of the Lord, and you actually are ecstatic, you know, joining Loknath Maharaj's, you know, Paritam. It's undescribable, but it is very, very fulfilling.
Very fulfilling, yes. Anarpita Kripa Moi Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Mataji. Srila Prabhupada says in his Srimad Bhagavad Gita lecture, all the different places are having the different of nature, Sattvagun, Rajagun, Tamagun, but temples are having that transcendental nature. So, they are the Vaikunthas. So, whenever we go to the temple, we feel the transcendence there. So, we can become blissful when we visit to the temple.
Purna Prajakesha Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. So actually, since they are directly related to the Krishna's pastime, it stimulates our affection for Krishna. It's external deepana. And yeah.
Thank you. Rukmini.
Yes. So there's other devotees there. So then we can do katayantascha mangnityam tushyanti cha ramanti cha. So it says in Bhagavad Gita that my devotees love to talk about me and enlighten one another by conversing about me. So one can find those devotees in those places.
Very nice. And I really like the saying about how it's an udipana. The holy places are udipanas. So they stimulate our love for Krishna. Now, if we have affection, what are we going to do in holy places? For me, I see we're going to keep them clean. If I really care about my local temple, you know, I'm going to go to my local temple, I'm going to clean it, I'm going to maintain it, I'm going to donate money to it, or I'm going to donate time. Same with the holy places, not just, and I'm going to go there and, oh, I'm ecstatic. But I'm going to, this Anubhav is going to manifest in specific voluntary actions to serve the holy places. Okay, so we've been through now all the 9 Anubhavs connected to Bhava from the Eastern Ocean. So we're going to be wrapping up today's class. And I thought this was a very wonderful quote to wrap up today's class. This is from Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Leela 4.135, where here Lord Chaitanya is saying that he wants to experience the anubhav of the ashraya. So the ashraya, of course, are the devotees. Of course, he's specifically speaking about Srimati Radharani, but the ashraya are the devotees who stimulate ecstatic love, and these devotees have anubhavas. And so Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's Krishna, is saying, hey, I want to be in the mood of the ashraya so I can do all these anubhavas. All right, we have 3 minutes. I'd like you to please get out wherever you're using to write your reflections. And I'd like you to spend just a few minutes here. We have 3 minutes left. I'd like you to spend those 3 minutes, please, writing your reflections on anubhav. Okay, thank you very much. So we'll come next week to talk about the sattvic abhavs, the involuntary, not forced, but involuntary, something that comes from the emotions without also involving the intelligence. So we'll see you, Krishna willing, next week for that. Srila Rupa Goswami ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sadhu Sangha ki jai.
Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna. So I'm just going to fix that thing in the PowerPoint, and I'll send to Shakti Sorabini to share with all of you. Hare Krishna.
Recording stopped.
Well, Mother Urmila.